Blog Talk Radio. of I don't know if I'm going to be repeating myself here. I hope not. Let me start here. This isn't fooling the people. I believe I got through two or three pages or four pages of this last week, and I covered another entire chapter. I've read so much of this book in different stages that the last one, Radiation, Biological, Chemical Experiments on the People, and last week I read Parts of Fooling the People, and one other chapter, which I kind of forget which one it was. But I feel it's so important to try to bring this out, and I've read much of this book over the course of the last many years that have been on the air, and it's just prophetic, you know, and I don't know, I can't seem to overstate the importance of this book, and understanding the American system, you know, and why we're so frustrated by it. I'm not sure if I went back. I don't know if I covered this in the last Thursday night show, but I'm going to continue here, and with Fooling the People chapter. On November 18th, 1993, The Wanderer, a national newspaper, James K. Fitzpatrick, a prominent journalist, revealed that while he has never believed in stories of a secret government of the Illuminati, Clinton's support of NAFTA made him wonder, especially because of statements made by Clinton during his acceptance speech when nominated by the Democrats. Clinton spoke about the influence of his old professor, Carol Quigley, author of Tragedy and Hope, and on his that had on his life. And after his election, Clinton told reporters how Quigley had spoken and written about a secret shadow government of powerful businessmen and bankers who controlled our political agenda. Clinton said, while a student, he decided to work with the secret group to enhance his political career. Fitzpatrick, not understanding how controlled our news is, was shocked that his interview wasn't discussed in the media. That this technique of controlling our leaders has long existed helps explain why attention should be directed to stop the corporate leaders. The politicians are just agents who can easily be replaced. In recent years, the growing use of computerized voting machines has provided new opportunities to control elections. There have been dozens of instances of vote fraud throughout the countries, such as Florida, Wisconsin, California, and sometimes judges throw out election results. The growing problems with these machines is that is being documented by computer professionals for social responsibility in Palo Alto, Election Watch in Pacific Palisades, California, and Sinatas in Cincinnati. Even the national media, including New York Times and Wall Street Journal, have discussed the dangers of computerized voting machines. Now, you got to remember this. This goes back to 1988, okay, when they were first warned and they knew that these voting machines were rigged. All right? And on November November 7, 1988, the New Yorker had a 23-page report on the dangers of computerized voting machines. Science News explained how modern vote machines help steal elections. And amazingly, when votes results are challenged, the computer programs usually aren't analyzed because the manufacturer have successfully claimed they are proprietary. And private corporations increasingly own our elections. Computer scientist Peter G. Newman, a computer-related risk, said, "The opportunities for rigging elections are child's play for vendors and knowledgeable election officials." In the 1988 New Hampshire primary, Dole won the precinct that used paper ballots while Bush won the computerized one. Even more threatening is the fact that in many cases, or many states, election results are reported to the New York City-based News Election Service, a privately owned company by ABC, a private company owned by ABC, CBS, and NBC, and the Associated Press. The book, A Vote Scam, The Stealing of America, documents the dangers of this operation. There is no system to challenge the announced results. For instance, each caucus in the Iowa primary reports the results to the NES, the Dubuque County, Iowa. Buchanan, back in '88, got 870 votes. But the next day, the Cedar Rapids Gazette quoted the AP saying Buchanan got 757 votes, and Dole's total was increased. When people complained, they were told there could be no final count until April. And numerous other instances of suspicious behavior occurred, and Buchanan may have been cheated out of a victory in Iowa, Arizona, and South Carolina. This is why thousands came to see Buchanan, while only a few voters came to see Dole. It is rather suspicious that Buchanan refused to complain about this. And the same thing is happening in the Ron Paul campaign. Now, this happened back in 1988. And here we are in 2012. Ron Paul, very similar to Buchanan, who was the Reform Party candidate back then, became stated as his votes in all these caucuses haven't been properly counted. All right, and the same goes with the same happened back in 2004. In all of these elections, okay, voter fraud was rampant, okay, in 2008. I can't be certain, it's not quite as well documented, but in 2000 and 2004, when the GOP won, it was definitely was, there was no question that there was, irregularities in the voting. I mean, millions of votes were not counted, and yet, nobody complained. I mean, Kerry, this son of a bitch, didn't even bother contesting, even though there were over 3 million votes that weren't counted, Democratic votes, I mean, in three different states. And that was well documented. And I mentioned this, I brought this up on my prior shows back in 04 and 05. I mean, there was just, absolutely amazing that these things could happen the way that they did. And I don't know. I just get so frustrated by the whole damn shebang that I can't really. It just disgusts me. The most dangerous scam used against the people are presidential edicts. Every president has issued orders and directives that are often called executive orders. However, in the 20th century, the use, scope, and authority of executive orders greatly increased, and these edicts have the force and effect of law. However, there is no constitutional basis for a president to make laws. The same thing is happening now, happened under Bush, and is happening under Obama. Now, I have to keep reminding you that this book was written in 1996. 20th century, the use, scope, and authority of EOs has greatly increased. These edicts have the force and effect of law. However, there is no constitutional basis for a president to make the laws. Congress should make the laws, and the president should administer and enforce it. There is much room for abuse of presidential power in these edicts. That nowhere does the Constitution say that a president can issue an executive order, nor do any federal statutes exist defining the purpose of permissible subject matter of executive orders. Previously, most executive orders dealt with routine administrative issues such as land use and civil service regulations. Executive orders now exist for the feds to seize all communications, to take over all food supplies and farms, to control all transportation, to force all civilians into work brigades, slave labor, to there take over all health and education activities, and for the post office to register everyone. These and other executive orders have been combined into Executive Order 11490, which Carter signed in 1979. And this is a dictatorship in waiting. One can only imagine the horrors of the secret executive orders that have never been published or leaked. The abuse of the presidential authority lies in presidents declaring a national emergency and martial law. Presidents have already signed executive orders declaring national emergencies because of events in the Middle East, Yugoslavia, South Africa, Kuwait, and chemical biological problems. How these events require a national emergency in the U.S. defies reality. In 1985, the New York Times asked why there had to be a national emergency in the U.S. over South Africa. Having a national emergency with a weakened constitution has become the norm to gradually get people used to the conditions of a police state. Executive Order 9066, issued February 19, 1942, by President Roosevelt, caused the internship of 120,000 Japanese Americans in glorified concentration camps. And along with being imprisoned for several years, these people, 75,000 of whom were American citizens, lost most of their assets. For this to happen just because a president signed one piece of paper shows how dangerous things are. If a phony emergency is declared, Clinton could then call for the surrender of all arms and arrest of his political opponents, who would be called a threat to national security. Now, Clinton didn't do this, but Obama is, and Bush did, all right? Now, you remember, this was written in 1996. Passing especially dangerous executive orders started on March 9, 1933, when Roosevelt weakened the Constitution by declaring a national emergency that put us into a state of war. On June 17, 1995, Texas Republican Party issued Resolution No. 5 calling for a return to constitutional government and an end to Roosevelt's emergency rule and weakening the Constitution. The press responded with a resounding silence. Recent EO executive orders have become absurd. On October 21, 1994, Clinton issued an executive order requiring schools to expel students who bring a gun to school. Such students should receive serious punishment, but Clinton has no constitutional authority to decide how schools deal with local problems. And Clinton is only the president. Clinton's speech announcing his policy received wide publicity, yet no one in the media complained about the abuse of power. We now get used to a president announcing new laws in the most minute details of our lives just after the November 1994 elections, and the president and the Washington Post reported that Clinton and his staff planned to govern more with effective orders, executive orders, and regulations. Clinton was elected president, not king or dictator. Now this is happening now, folks, now more than ever, all right? When Republican Jack Brooks, in March 1987, asked presidential aide Frank Gallucci to provide a list of all the presidential edicts issued since 1981, he refused to comply. Jim Wright said, Congress cannot react responsibly to new dictates for national policy set in operation by the executive branch behind closed doors. Presidential edicts are often classified with no one in Congress even aware of their subject matter. Control by Congress over executive rule, executive rulemaking has been replaced by a powerful executive branch which is destroying the checks and balances designed by the Constitution. In Myers v. the U.S., 1926, the Supreme Court said the doctrine of the separation of powers was adopted by the Convention of 1787, not to promote efficiency, but to preclude the exercise of arbitrary power. The purpose was not to avoid friction, but by means of inevitable friction incident to the distribution of the government's power among three departments, to save the people from autocracy. Speed and efficiency, however, are not the proper ends of government. If they were, the framers would have created a dictatorship. Rule by executive edict means that a president can sign a piece of paper and pass unpopular laws that are totally against the will of Congress and the people, as we saw when Clinton used an executive order to loan money to Mexico. Those promoting the New World Order are deliberately changing our history and our culture. A good book that describes how history books are confusing and distorting our history is Lies My Teacher Told Me by James W. Lohman. The textbook publishers avoid controversies, only present a positive tone, and ignore much American history. Schools socialize students to be good and obedient citizens. The racial prejudice of people like President Wilson, the contributions of women, and the role of militias in founding our republic are removed from history. Issues such as General Butler and the planned military coup that rarely discussed in history books. Lohan, to his credit, said there may be an upper-class conspiracy manipulated by elite white male capitalists who orchestrate how history is written as part of their scheme to perpetrate their own power and privilege at the expense of the rest of us. State-controlled curricula promote corporate-influenced distortions of our heritage. It will be much harder for the younger generation to stand up to constitutional government because of the distortions being taught in the schools. In November 1995, the U.S. Department of Education released a report based on questioning 22,000 school children about our history. 50% of the children weren't even aware that the Cold War existed. A 1994 study of the National Assessment of the Educational Progress revealed that 57% of public school seniors lack a basic understanding of U.S. history. With poor schooling and TV addiction, for many, history started with the New Deal. People no longer remember the value of our republic or the wisdom of the founders. The shift to overcome based education, Goals 2000, and the multicultural means that if the corporate controllers aren't stopped, one day few people will defend the Constitution because few will even remember that it once existed. And multiculturalism has played a key role in destroying of Canada as a nation state, and this is also why it is being pushed in the U.S. It is one more strategy being used to weaken national sovereignty to move towards a world government. And I mentioned this before, and I wrote an article recently. It's on my website, lasteelshow.org, regarding a poll that was taken by the Pew Foundation several thousand seniors, high school seniors. 30% had heard and knew more or less what the Constitution was. 70% of the graduating seniors did not have any clue of the Constitution or what it meant to their lives or what it meant. This is disgraceful. I recall maybe 3 or 4, maybe 4 years ago, I had to laugh. I was given a class on Constitution, on the Constitution. It was Constitution Day in local high school. And I was in a class of seniors who were maybe 2 or 3 months away from graduation. And I asked 30 kids in one classroom if they knew what the Constitution was. They raised their hands. Not one. This was in a social studies class. Not one raised their hands. They had heard of it, but they had no idea what it was. And so I felt it compelled to explain to them not only what it was, but go through the first 10, the first 10 amendments. I didn't have time in the class to go through all of them. But at least I felt they should learn the Bill of Rights. They should know this. Once I got through the class, there was virtually an uproar by these kids, because they hadn't been taught this before. They didn't know. They didn't know that they had these rights as citizens. The right to warrant the search and seizure, unlawful search and seizures. The right to freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom of, right to assemble, right to free speech. They just didn't understand the concepts, nor did they understand and touched on this. And I felt this was absolutely criminal. All right? So, but now I fully, after reading this book and understanding the system as I do, we're teaching children to be stupid and not know their rights, not know that what this government is about. And the more I see it, the more the system works with them to keep them ignorant, to keep them stupid, to keep them down. This didn't happen when I was in school. We learn about these things at a young age. Today, this doesn't happen. We're teaching kids computer skills, Anyway. It really disgusts me. Multiculturalism is also being used to separate us from the Christian heritage and Western culture. Other cultures are highlighted while ours is undermined. The California Teachers Association released a calendar that doesn't identify 4th of July. It includes Buddhist Nirvana Day and Ramadan, but not Christmas or Thanksgiving. The National Education Association passed out millions of calendars to teachers that listed UN Day and various Buddhist and Muslim holidays, but did not mention Christmas. Listing various religious holidays is fine, but to remove traditional American religious and patriotic holidays is outrageous. Increasingly basic American constitutional and political history is not being taught. Under the New World Order, within a few generations, our history will be forgotten because it will be banned. Boy, I honestly believe this. On May 16, 1993, Parade magazine published an article about putting false words in the mouths of dead people. He cited as an example that supposedly false words of Patrick Henry, "Give me liberty or give me death." In fact, Henry said these noble words March 23, 1775, at St. John's Church in Richmond, Virginia, in conjunction with the Second Virginia Convention. Karl Marx said, "If you can cut people off from their history, they can be easily persuaded." An important book is The Rewriting of American History by Catherine Millard. A librarian at the Library of Congress, she documents many instances where our Christian heritage and memorial to the Founding Fathers are being erased or distorted. Independence Square in Philadelphia, where the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence were signed, had a national museum, which was taken over by the Independence National Historical Park in 1951. The museum was disbanded, with its contents dispersed to different buildings, and many of the exhibits are no longer available to the public. Important Christian markers and plaques about Philadelphia have been replaced with humanistic plaques. The Liberty Bell has been moved from its original site and is now called a symbol of world freedom. And an important painting, The First Prayer in Congress, has been lost. In Christ Church in Philadelphia, often called the Nation's Church, famous stained glass such as Patriot's Window and Liberty Window were moved, supposedly to be cleared, but instead they had been replaced by plain glass. Sections of the Liberty of Congress have been closed to renovations, but the improvements made it much harder for librarians and researchers to use the facilities. The main card catalog was also deliberately destroyed, except that the librarians and their own prevented this from by threatening to sue. Computerized replacement had an error rate of 50%. The new head librarian in October 15, 1987, fired many people with no replacements, leaving various departments disorganized and understaffed. In an especially disgusting display of what is happening, religious scenes in the Library of Congress are replaced during renovations by grotesque gargoyle paintings. This exemplifies how Christ will be replaced by atheism, or worse, in the New World Order. In the Library of Congress, rare books pertaining to our Christian heritage and the Founding Fathers are now listed as missing in inventory and changed to the rare book collection, which means the public cannot see these books. In some instances, Millard found that books listed as missing were in their correct place. Millard listed groups of books that were all removed from circulation at the same time. There is an organized campaign to remove from the public reach rare books on Christianity and the Founding Fathers. In some historical and religious exhibits, American history has been greatly altered and falsified. Millard was refused promotions and salary raises when he fought these changes. Deborah Maceda works for the Library of Congress as a police detective in the Protective Services Office. For several years, she complained about many books being damaged and stolen. One would expect that she would have been thanked for doing her job. Instead, her many memos, which also included ways to improve security, were ignored until she was transferred. There were proceedings to hire her until Congress intervened. Rather, there were proceedings to fire her until Congress intervened. How several agencies, including the FBI and investigating the Library of Congress, which a union called out of control. On July 6, 1996, CBS Evening News said the Library of Congress was often missing psychiatric testing, which are generally illegal in the workplace, to harass and fire whistleblowers. If people are stripped of the ability to make their own things and their own history, they may continue to act properly, but they lose the capacity to learn for themselves about their own rightness. They stagnate or surrender, and those who steal their right to make their own history can be condemned, for they steal from people the right to know what they know and the right to become human. History is culture. Our history is being cleansed to fit what our corporate controllers want. And boy, I've seen this so much. You know, the revision of history is so blatant today. The news media, schools, textbooks, it's just sick. It's just sick. And people who write books on true history, you know, they're censored. They're, you know, they can't get published. It's just, thank God for the internet, okay? And for those people who are writing real truth out there and presenting it, because that's all we have, folks. If they start to censor this at the internet, which they are already, but, I mean, if they really start to censor it, there won't be any truth left. If people are stripped of the ability, I just read that. No, if people are stripped, this is a quote. I just read that. Since 1670, when a jury refused to convict William Penn, it has been part of our heritage that juries have a right to decide a case based on the law as well as the facts of the case. In 1794, Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, John Jay, said in Georgia versus Brailsford, the jury has a right to a judge, to judge both the law as well as the fact in controversy. Alexander Hamilton said, jury should acquit even against the judge's destruction. If exercising their judgment with discretion and honesty, they have a clear conviction that the charge of the court is wrong. Constitutions of four states, Maryland, Indiana, Oregon, and Georgia, specifically guarantee the right of jurors to judge the law. Today, 23 states declare the right of a jury, of jury nullification, the right of a jury to judge a law, in freedom of speech regarding libel and sedition. Throughout the 1800s, this principle was primarily challenged only once when Congress passed an anti-slave law, which Northern jurors refused to support. Then the government was chose to the people. Then the government was close to the people, so laws were rarely passed that weren't that were against the people's wishes. However, in 1895, in Sparf and Hansen versus U.S., the Supreme Court ruled that while juries still had the right to judge the law, a judge didn't have to inform a jury of this. So, in other words, even if you think the law is bogus, the judge doesn't have to tell you that you have the right to decide yourself if the law doesn't make any sense. In the 1900s, we have been swamped with laws that many are against because government often no longer represents the people. The Fully Informed Jury Association informs citizens of the right to reject a law while on a jury, despite what a judge states. People informing prospective jurors of this right have been harassed by the authorities, and some have been arrested and tried for jury tampering. In other words, people just quoting the words of the founding fathers like Thomas Jefferson are being arrested. The authorities are getting desperate because increasingly juries in various cases are voting not guilty as word gets out. And perhaps next people telling prospective jurors about the right to free speech and freedom of worship will also be arrested. Where will it stop? On June 19, 1995, CBS Evening News completely distorted our history. A judge said letting a jury decide the law would create anarchy, and this would be taking the law into their own hands. Well, the head of FIGA, which is the Fully Informed Jury Association, was interviewed, and while he discussed the views of the founding founders supporting the right of jury nullification, this was censored from what appeared on TV. It's amazing. It's just amazing how they censor the hell out of everything. It's amazing how anybody can get anything. That's why books like this, I don't know, you know, where you can find it. I believe it's still on Amazon. You might be able to get a copy of it. You might be able to go to Cassandra Press, San Rafael, California, if they're still around, and order a back copy of it, or maybe they can tell you, you know, where you can get a copy of it. It's just beyond me, folks. It's just beyond my comprehension how badly, how horribly we're being deceived. After the Oklahoma bombing, the Wall Street Journal wrote a propaganda piece defining jury power activism as a racist and anti-Semitic militia plot. That the founders and many justices have long supported this right, which exists to this day, was ignored. The Village Voice quoted this article suggesting that jury rights people may well be extremists and racists. It was stated in the Wall Street Journal, so it must be true. Disinformation creates more lies and our heritage is gradually forgotten. A few public trials like the OJ case are now being used as an excuse to attack and exchange the jury system to further weaken our civil rights. Another strategy is to create more crime and a false war on drugs by deliberately flooding the country with illegal drugs. U.S. officials had undercut the war on drugs for so long, and exposés had dribbled out so sporadically that public outrage never reached critical mass. This is being done to scare people into giving up certain constitutionally protected rights, such as the right to bear arms. Chaos and fear have historically been used to create a totalitarian state. Rather than try to seize all guns, a far better solution to crime would be to resolve the issues that have turned people to criminal activity and to stop the government from flooding the country with illegal drugs. On one radio show, a student quoted his college professor as saying that main reason why the founders wanted people to own a gun was to prevent government tyranny. The expert on the show, who had written a book on gun control, said this was a myth. Most historians and legal scholars understand that the students and his professor are correct, but many now say otherwise. One reason we no longer have constitutional government is because our constitutional heritage is being relegated to the level of a myth. On March 9, 1994, ABC ran Day 1, America Under the Gun. The reporter said, with so much crime, the Constitution is becoming a luxury. The media constantly tells us that crime keeps getting worse, when that is not true. The Washington Center for Media and Public Affairs found that between 1992 and 93, the number of crime stories reported by ABC, CBS, and NBC had doubled. The drug scare is being used as an excuse to tighten government control over the people and to strengthen the national security state. Crime is being used as an excuse to federalize and militarize state and local police and to unify national police force. And, buddy, they are doing a good job of it, and are, you know, it's there now. An obvious example of how drugs have been used to control and demoralize the people is exemplified by the black ghettos being flooded with illegal drugs. Ample supply helped create demand. The radical black movement of the 1960s became submerged in a drug haze. Louis Farrakhan was quite right to state, when being interviewed by Barbara Walters on ABC in 1994, in the mid-1960s, black community was suddenly flooded with illegal drugs, and this was done by the government. Norval Morris, a law professor, interviewed almost 100 experts in law enforcement, and they called the war on drugs a war against blacks. White people buy and sell most illegal drugs, but most people imprisoned are black, and that is still today. It hasn't changed, folks, not at all. It is just, I mean, when you consider that 64-65% of all the people incarcerated are black, that tells you that 1 in 3 black males have a criminal record. It is much easier to control and manipulate a society that loses its will, to drugs. Drug use weakens willpower and ability to independent thinking. This can be illegal drugs like cocaine or legal drugs like Prozac or Valium. Many schools post drug-free zones, signs, and proceed to drug the children with Ritalin to control them. The end result is that people have difficulty thinking clearly and defending their rights, which are slowly being lost. When Japan ruled China during World War II, it flooded China with opium, and as did England in the 1800s to control the populace and raise money for government operations. We're doing the same thing today in this country, flooding it with opium from Afghanistan. Heroin. Besides these strange strategies, many other techniques are used to fool the people. Reasonable goals are proclaimed that most would support, while hidden objectives are promoted that support the one-world government. Noble objectives are promoted that also provide more wealth and control for the corporate elite, while weakening the rights of the people. False promises of greater material wealth, jobs, and environmental protection are used to promote NAFTA and GATT. And while these treaties actually foster the destruction of the middle class and the U.S. sovereignty. And, buddy, this is happening today. You see it. And it's, I mean, this is it. This book is prophetic. Under President Carter, there was a call to help third world nations with their debt crisis. Many decent people wanted to raise the standard of living in these nations, so they supported a plan to provide assistance. Instead, the money was used to pay interest on multinational bank loans. Asset foreclosure laws also show that laws are passed supposedly to protect the people against criminals. And then the laws are enforced well beyond their original intent or language to remove the people's rights. These laws were originally passed to seize the property of drug dealers and mafia leaders, but today they are often applied to innocent citizens while the criminals hide their assets so they cannot be seized. These laws are being enacted supposedly to protect the people when, in fact, constitutional rights are violated. Another strategy is to prove to introduce an especially egregious law or program in a less populated state where there is less media coverage. If the law passes, it is introduced into other states. If there is great resistance, the government backs down, always watching how the people react, perhaps presenting the same law in another state with certain changes. In 1989, Oklahoma passed a law requiring everyone to register their assets, with a heavy fine if you refused or hid any assets. So similar laws may be passed in other states. As discussed in Chapter 15, today the National Guard has basically established martial law in parts of Puerto Rico. This has been going on for several years with little press coverage. It is done in the name of protecting the people from crime as the people lose their rights. And how long will it be before that occurs in many states? Now, we never hear any news from Puerto Rico about Puerto Rico, none whatsoever. It's our 51st state, basically. You know, it's just a little territory, but we never hear any news from the territories, Philippines or anything. You know, very long laws are passed that include obscure clauses that are difficult to find and the few would support. These clauses are rarely discussed by the press or in Congress. After Senator Brown read NAFTA in 2,000-page document, he was shocked enough to reverse his vote and reject it. The GATT Treaty establishing the World Trade Organization contains 22,000 pages. Provisions in GATT make it harder for Americans to save for retirement. The amount U.S. employees can contribute to 401k plans have been reduced to compensate for lost revenue due to tariffs being reduced. A U.N. Food Safety and Trade Commission will help set GATT standards, which may lower or remove U.S. consumer safety laws such as pesticide use. We may soon be flooded with radiated products because our nation will insist on that under GATT. We are. All our meats and so much is being radiated. Under the Constitution, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 3, Congress shall regulate commerce with foreign nations. This has been illegally surrendered by GATT to a foreign entity. GATT created a new commission, Codex, under the UN World Health Organization. It is now in the process of establishing strict international standards which will require a doctor's prescription to obtain supplements, because this is what the large drug companies want. This will cause many problems in the alternative health movement, and many health food stores will close. This has already happened, folks. You know, and the supplements have become these companies are being harassed. They're being closed down. They're being unbelievable. Like Clinton Dole will complain for 5 minutes and then pass more laws destroying U.S. sovereignty. After the Oklahoma housing bombing, rather, I constantly read and heard the right-wing attack in the national media as being conspiracy nuts, partly because it felt the U.N. was a serious threat to the U.S. Never once was there a discussion of the huge body of evidence supporting such concerns. A classic example of this propaganda took place in October 1995 on Talk of the Nation, a PBS talk radio show. The topic was the UN, and three guests were all pro-UN. And sure enough, as the show began, the announcer asked about right-wing concerns over the UN controlling the U.S. The three guests immediately agreed this was foolish. This was like asking a Marxist to criticize communism. When you debate a topic and have three guests, at least one should have an opposing position. Otherwise, you just get propaganda, which is what NPR is all about. NPR is a propaganda network. It is not that the UN alone is a threat. It is the large corporations that have always controlled the UN, and the concern is what they plan to do with it. Right from the start, the UN has been a corporate front. The CFR, led by the Soviet agent Alger Hiss, played a key role in establishing the UN, and its headquarters are built on Rockefeller-donated land. The U.S. delegation to form the UN included many CFR members, and the president and the press declares that the UN is quite disorganized and incompetent, and an example of this is the failed UN peacekeeping operations. This is a convenient excuse to hide the future plans of the UN to be the center of a one-world government. C.B. Dahl, FDR, my exploited father-in-law, said, "The UN is but a long-range international banking apparatus neatly set up for financial and economic profit by a small group of powerful one-world revolutionaries hungry for profit and power." Truman signed the UN Participation Act in December 20, 1945. Under this act, the president shall not be deemed to require the authorization of Congress to provide troops to the UN Security Council as the president desired. The constitutional requirement that only Congress can declare a war was illegally weakened by this threat treaty. Representative Frederick Smith said that the measure strikes at the very heart of the Constitution. It provides that the power to declare war shall be taken from Congress and given to the President. And there is the essence of a dictatorship. And a dictatorial control over all else must inevitably tend to follow. Time is proving him correct. Congress has little influence over how the U.S. votes in the U.N., and the U.N., not Congress, approved the Korean War. At the U.N. and on October 24, 1950, Truman said, "The men who laid down their lives for the U.N. in Korea died in order that the U.N. might live. Are you prepared to die for the U.N.?" asked the relatives of 54,000 soldiers killed in that non-war, if we should be concerned about the U.N. To this day, U.S. troops serving in Korea serve under the U.N. When U.S. serviceman David Hilleman was killed over North Korea in 1994, his body was returned in a casket covered with a U.N. flag. On April 25, 1996, Anthony Lake, Clinton's national security advisor, said in a lecture, "We need to be a global 911. To manage the world crisis." While many criticize the action of UN peacekeepers, people don't understand that NATO is a military arm of the UN. NATO and CETO are created collective defense organizations under Article 51 of the UN Charter. And Articles 1, 5, 7, and 12 of the NATO Treaty show the reliance of NATO on the UN for its legitimacy. On December 15, 1995, the UN Security Council approved the NATO mission to Bosnia. This approval was necessary for NATO to act, supporting the policy of the UN being used to create a one-world government. The new head of NATO is a Spanish Marxist Republican, Funderburk. Representative Funderburk and 35 others in Congress attacked this appointment. Led by members of the CFR in 1961, the U.S. State Department issued a publication, Freedom from War, outlining a detailed plan to disarm the U.S. military and establish a U.N. army. The U.S. Arms Control and Disarmament Agency, also established in 61, is working toward this goal, and Brooks, like a world effectively controlled by the U.N., introduced the world peace through world law and world peace through world law. Describe these plans as great detail. Aside from local police who will carry small arms, the entire world is to be disarmed except for the powerful UN Army and police force. In 1992, UN Secretary General Boutros Ghali presented an agenda for peace calling for permanent UN army. The report said the time of absolute and exclusive sovereignty has passed, and it listed reasons that should justify the UN using its army to intervene in a nation. And it's just, you know, I have to, I have 1 minute left to the show, and I want to stop here, but I want to advise everybody, if they can, to go to look at, try to get this book, Treason, the New World Order by Gurudas, G-U-R-U-D-A-S, one of the best books I've ever read on political thought and science, and, you know, I can't endorse it higher. I go to Cassandra Press, P.O. Box 150868, San Rafael, California, 94915. And these are the publishers of this book. And it was published in 1996. Whether it's out of print now, I don't know. But all I can say is I would highly, highly, highly recommend that if you're interested in what's going on around this world, and especially in this country right now, this book explains it all, and it was written in 1996. So please inform yourselves. Go for it. And have George Dixon joining us Friday night with George Dixon. And we'll be discussing a number of fascinating subjects. Oh, and I should credit George for, he lent me this book, which I unfortunately have never given him back, though he never asked for it. But, he gave me this a number of years ago to read, and I've read it over and over and over again, but and read many parts on the air, and will continue to do so. But, again, I thank you very much for listening, and please join us tomorrow night right here, 8 o'clock, with George Dixon. Good night.